Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our Uncommon Economic Indicators Project is now taking phone calls. Want to report a story about the economic indicators in your neighborhood? Call 1-800-543-2543. These people did.
I'm still riding the most fuel-efficient vehicle there is. It was perfected in 1866, and it's called the bicycle.
Whenever she goes to the supermarket now, she sees white people using coupons.
We were riding our bike around Myrtle and Knickerbocker Avenues. We saw a 23-foot speedboat been abandoned on the sidewalk, and people had been tossing their trash in it.
When I read the marriage announcements in the New York Sunday Times, I see that a lot of people are formerly employed rather than currently employed.
We have a very high rating. We're at 800. We are having difficulty with the banks. It's really unbelievable. It's a real nightmare.
See and contribute to your Uncommon Economic Indicators at WNYC.org with written stories, photos, and videos. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or contribute by phone at 1-800-543-2543 for the Uncommon Economic Indicators hotline, 1-800-543-2543. A New York Magazine article this week is full of uncommon economic indicators and some pretty deep and interesting ones about who we become as human beings during times like these, especially in the New York area. For example, a research finding that thinking about money makes people very much like the archetypal ambitious New Yorker, self-absorbed and very motivated. Thinking about money you've lost, on the other hand, can make you more sensitive to physical pain and to social rejection. Jennifer Senior wrote the article called Recession Culture and joins us now. Hi, Jennifer.
How are you?
Good. And we're going to open up the phones right away on this. We don't have that much time, but we're going to let people call in and tell us how you think you've seen the recession change New York area culture, if at all. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And those studies I just cited from your article by the consumer psychologist Kathleen Vose, you conclude that a lot of people thinking about money they've lost all the time, like now, could make for a more neighborly and civic-minded New York. Why would bad times turn us into Mr. Rogers' neighborhood?
I don't know. It's an interesting and sort of counterintuitive finding. I think what she concluded when she was looking at people who were thinking about money that they lost is that they probably were more inclined to work collaboratively than on their own, and be sort of more civic-minded. Here's the most relevant finding she had. When she had her interview subject stare at two separate kinds of screensavers, one was just a tank of exotic fish, and the other was a tank of floating dollar bills. If people stared at those floating dollar bills and they were then asked if they wanted to do a task, they wanted to do it on their own. About 80% of them said that they wanted to work alone. If they were staring at something neutral, like the fish, 80% of them wanted to work with other people on a task. And this, plus some other things that she's been working on, leads her to believe that if money is not foremost in your mind, your inclinations are more collaborative rather than more kind of individualistic and swashbuckling.
What a finding, because it was 80% in one direction and then 80% in the other direction.
80-80.
Wanting to work on their own if they saw the money on the screensaver, or wanting to work with other people if they saw the fish. And what did you conclude, that they should put a lot of aquariums in the AIG building?
In AIG, everywhere, really. I mean, warring nations ought to have aquariums at this point. You know, I mean, it just seems so natural. I mean, I'm kidding, obviously,
of course.
Yeah, it just seemed great. I don't know if you want an indicator of this, but volunteerism in New York is through the roof right now. So, I mean, there's something to this idea.
You've got a whole bunch of very specific indicators in a couple of charts in the article, which is great, like that one. Volunteerism in New York is way, way up. Of course, some of that is self-interest. We probably all know people now who are volunteering because they lost their job and they hope that it's going to either build their resumes or lead to a paid job. But some people just to give back. Also, though, people applying to study at the Union Theological Seminary and the Jewish Theological Seminary, way, way up. Museum attendance, 92nd Street Y, single ticket sales, both on the rise. Does anything tie all those together?
Well, I would say that the applications to theological seminaries and the volunteer boom are connected in that they're both sort of indications of people thinking beyond themselves. I would also want to point something out about the volunteerism. I didn't have room to say this, except for maybe in, you know, a first draft. Most of those volunteers are not unemployed. They're people who are just thinking differently, and that's mm-hmm. what's so interesting. If you talk to people at Big Brothers, Big Sisters, where they literally have twice the number of volunteers that they did, and that's a really labor-intensive commitment, they'll tell you that the number of people that they have who are unemployed is barely more than those who were unemployed before.
That's good. And I think it's part of a generational shift, too, because people who've studied this know that young adults today vote at a lower rate than young adults a generation ago, but they volunteer much more.
Oh, my goodness. I wish I'd known that. Then there might be some of that, although, again, what's interesting is that they tend to have a lot of retirees at both New York Cares and I suppose at Big Brothers Big Sisters. I mean, I don't think they're the bulk of them, but mm-hmm. either way, I think it's something in the air. I just think that Vose's work is very profound in this way, that there really may be something. Also, rhetorically, you know, people are sort of encouraging this kind of behavior. I mean, we hear people like Barack Obama going on Jay Leno and saying things like, you know, please do something generative with your you know, time. Please make something. Please don't go and be a banker, be a doctor, or teach. You know, or you have somebody like Jon Stewart going on, I'm sorry, you know, saying to Jim Cramer, you know, when are people going to realize that our wealth is our work, mm-hmm. right? So again, it's this idea that, like, maybe, you know, what we, you know, that working itself, whether it's for free or in a particular profession, that it should be something constructive. I mean, I think that's sort of in the air, you know, it's a trope or something.
Yeah, and we'll see if Obama, being the unique president that he is, with the unique things that he thinks and has to say, will wind up actually kind of bridging the gap for the next generation of young adults. Because I think what happened over time was people became more and more cynical about the ability of government to really improve their lives or improve society. But they still wanted an outlet for that. So they wound up, you know, going back to the smaller act of private volunteerism. If Obama, to some degree, by promoting volunteerism, can actually rebuild faith in government with that and all the other things that he's doing, then it may wind up that that both are seen in a more positive light.
Now, I think that, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that that's right. I think they feed one another. I mean, and I think his call to service in January is certainly one of the things that spurred on, you know, volunteers when he talked about it, right, in his inaugural speech. He also, I might point this out, it's a subtle thing, but he's a father of young kids, so people sort of have this kind of unconscious awareness of his being a caretaker himself, that he's kind of a person who divides his time. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
I don't think that's nothing.
It continues the impression of Jennifer Senior from New York Magazine, who wrote the article Recession Culture. And you make a bold and optimistic prediction about New York in this article, the one I promoted the segment with, that a deep recession now may mean a decline in quality of life, like with transit and parks cuts, where the examples are used. But it is not likely to return us to the New York of the hard times 70s with a lot of violent crime and smelly streets and all that. Why not?
Yeah, because it's a different New York. I mean, let's start with the fact that back in the 70s, only 23% of New Yorkers owned their homes, and now 33% do. And maybe 10% doesn't sound like much, but it is. And that means that a third of New Yorkers have a real stake in their neighborhoods. Policing methods are totally different. So while crime was going through the roof back in the 70s, every crime indicator, every single form of crime is down since the recession. And that's not foretold. That's not because of the recession. There's no one particular pattern. But it just so happens in New York that the policing methods that were working are continuing to still work. There were race riots back then. We now have a black governor and a black president. I would not say that, you know, problems are solved in this particular way in our world. But, I mean, I would point out that we've moved on. So, again, it's just we're not looking at the same city. And so when I talk about New York not reverting and it possibly opening up some of the lovelier aspects of the 70s, I'm talking about the fact that against this reasonably safe and tranquil backdrop, costs are dropping. And that's important for a middle class if they want to get a toehold here.
And so NYU professor Dalton Conley is even quoted in your article saying, we may wind up with the good parts of the 70s, like bohemian culture in a more affordable city, without the bad. Nice dream, anyway.
Nice dream. Look, you know, and I don't think anybody is saying that suddenly, you know, we will now have a perfectly wonderful middle class spine in this city. There are still going to be ghastly, you know, kind of economic disparities. And I'd point out that they're not only a bad thing. I mean, the fact that there's huge gaps here between rich and poor also does mean that both the richest people still want to live here and the poorest people still come here, you know, that immigrants are still coming in. It's not necessarily an indicator of something horrible, right? But it's nice to think that maybe this vanishing, you know, middle and working class that we've had can move somewhere other than the Far Rockaways. I mean, it's a nice dream. That's right. And there might be, you know, even like a 5% chance that there will be some movement in this direction, right?
Right. Though you do acknowledge in the piece that for all the talk about laid off bankers right now, the recession hits unemployed men of color the hardest, people who can financially least afford it. And you refer to an El Diario La Prensa report on reverse remittances, even people in Latin American countries actually being asked to send money to their relatives here, which is amazing. So that just sounds like pain among the already hurting, not cultural revival.
That it's true. In fact, I had to make him repeat that comment because I couldn't believe it. You know, he also talked about increases in hate crimes towards Latinos going on, not in New York City, but in the surrounding areas. You know, a lot of anger directed at them for taking jobs, things like that. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to minimize. You can't trivialize, number one, the pain of the unemployed, which is considerable, and we can talk about the, you know, long-term psychological and economic costs to those people. Also, you can't, you know, minimize the pain of those who are bearing the brunt of this disproportionately. Though I would point out that not all immigrant groups are the same. I mean, some, you know, there are immigrant groups that have their sort of own microeconomies where, you know, it's possible, and, you know, I wouldn't want to go out on a sturdy limb and say this, but some immigrant groups have methods of lending to one another that actually make their businesses, you know, kind of more solid than those who actually got money from banks. You know, if you've got like a kind of community system that's participating in keeping economies afloat, they might actually in some ways be more durable in moments like this.
Right. But we know that there are parts of East Asian Flushing that are doing a lot better than the rest of the city.
That is exactly the kind of things that's the kind of thing that I'm thinking of.
And so, before we run out of time, you have an interesting gender analysis in the piece, too. Stats about how laid off men spend their time. They will do a lot more of what you call passive housework, like being in the same room as their children, but almost no additional active child care. Something about male identity there?
Yes. Quite a bit of it. The more attached a man seems to be to his role as breadwinner, as opposed to a guy who sort of shares the burden in the house, the less likely he is, once he's laid off, to lift a finger when he's home. So, in total, per day, a guy who's been laid off, this is on average looking at Bureau of Labor Statistics, an able-bodied laid-off guy spends an extra 3.5 minutes per day looking after the kids. As you point out, in terms of passive kind of supervision, it might be more, meaning that while he's watching TV and they're in the next room, he's kind of keeping an eye on them. They will also do a little bit more around the house that are sort of Tim Allen-ish things. You know, they do more yard work. They tinker and they repair things. And I shouldn't say a bit. It's over an hour more. But they also watch 2 extra hours of television per day. They sleep an extra hour. You know, there are other things that don't go into the household economy at all.
And what was the stat? I'm surprised it was even measurable. 3 minutes on average more a day of childcare.
Well, that's because the American Time Use Survey, which I'm sure you've heard about, in Maryland they keep these copiously detailed records where people for years have been writing down, really like tracking their every minute. And then there are economists and sociologists and, you know, other kinds of academics who sit there and painstakingly break these minutes down so that they do actually have data on this. Yeah.
Well, a whole article of really interesting and many uncommon economic indicators from Jennifer Senior in New York Magazine. It's called Recession Culture. Jennifer, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, is the CIA lying about who it briefed on torture and when? We will follow up on the accusation by Senator Bob Graham made on this program yesterday and getting a lot of national attention.